This is Orson Welles, speaking from Treasure Island in San Francisco Bay. This broadcast will also come to you from St. Louis, Missouri, New York City, and from Waco in the state of Texas. We'll get to that in just a minute.
Today's broadcast is very special, and Lear Incorporated wishes to devote all the time possible to bringing this program to you. So in no more than 30 seconds, let me remind you that Lear, L-E-A-R, has been making aircraft radio since 1930, and that now Lear's unusual experience in producing fine radios is being used in making radios you can buy for your home. Later, I'll give you a hint of one of the new developments you'll find in Lear radios. Remember the name Lear, L-E-A-R. Now, Mr. Welles brings you his views and opinions on events as he sees them. The opinions expressed on these broadcasts do not necessarily represent the views of Lear Incorporated.
Some millions of Americans came to a World's Fair here in Treasure Island not so long ago, and a million or so more have come here since on more serious affairs, for this, you know, is now a mighty naval station, a jumping-off place for those who've gone out to war in the Pacific, and a reception center for the many who've come back. Tourists and transient sailors have had this much in common anyway, a breathless view of bridge and sky, of ships come proudly to a proud city, and of the place itself, the magic city named for St. Francis, who used to talk to the little birds about the love of God, and to men about the brotherhood of man. When last I was here in San Francisco, it was spring. Spring, and the Conference of the United Nations seemed to hold the promise of a world springtime, the awakening of decency between the governments, of justice among the peoples. Peace, I remembered, looked bright and green on the bud. But now it's winter again, and across the sea, war, which started in a very distant-sounding place called Manchuria, is still raging. It's winter. And in Washington, on the desk of the Secretary of Agriculture, is a proposal to slaughter 1 million hens, the intention being to cut egg production and keep prices up. Winter has just begun in Warsaw, where 10,000 human beings will starve to death in this Christmas month of December. Spring and peace seem quite a ways off today, today being the day after the day after the fourth anniversary of Pearl Harbor, in the fifth month of the first year of the age of the atom. Well, my business in Treasure Island in the Bay of the City of St. Francis on this day concerns theaters. Theaters and heroes. There are three large, well-equipped theaters here at Treasure Island where men of the Navy see not only movies, but USO camp shows, Hollywood Victory Committee productions, and so on. I played here myself with our Mercury Magic Show, not infrequently, and so have many of my friends. Until today, these playhouses have been known simply as Theater No. 1, Theater No. 2, and Theater No. 3. Today, they're being renamed, being dedicated to the memory of three heroes, representatives of the land, sea, and air components of the Navy, representatives also of three American races and of three American creeds. I'm here at the invitation of Commodore R.W. Carey, commanding officer of this center, and we're now seated on the stage of one of the theaters, number three as it happens, in the audience of dignitaries, admirals, and so on, and a great many enlisted men. My role here is that of a storyteller and an interviewer, and I'll tell you the stories now become legendary of the three men now being honored here, and I'll interview their parents, who are seated at microphones at various points in the United States. The dedications proper will be made by Commodore Carey, and the next voice you hear will be his.
Now hear this, to all hands. Theater number three shall henceforth be known as the John Bassaloni Theater.
John Bassaloni. Gunnery Sergeant John Bassaloni, United States Marine Corps, killed in action 19 February 1945, D-Day, at Iwo Jima. John's father is an immigrant, a tailor by trade and a good one. The boy grew up in Raritan, New Jersey, one of 11 children. One October night, 3 years ago in Guadalcanal, the Jap launched a savage counterattack against Marine positions, and John Bassaloni was in charge of two sections of heavy machine guns. With one of his sections knocked out, John moved an extra gun into action, repaired another gun under fire, manned it personally, fought his way through hostile forces to bring up more ammunition, and held his line. As far as the history books are concerned, the facts are as simple as that. 3 days and nights without food or rest, his own gun crews virtually annihilated. But with them, the larger part of the Japanese regiment, the bodies in a great pile before John Bassaloni's guns. They gave him the Medal of Honor, a hero's triumphal tour of the United States, during which he had time to marry Lena May Rigi, a woman Marine sergeant. A note has just been handed me. It says that Mr. Salvatore Bassaloni was waiting in a radio station on the other side of the continent to talk to us about his son has been taken ill. Is too ill to broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I wish you could have heard Mr. Bassalone talking about John. In New York a couple of days ago, I asked him why, after John got his medal and everything, he turned down a commission for stateside duty. I asked John's father why Sergeant John Bassalone left Sergeant Lena Bassalone and went back into combat where he was killed. And John's father told me that it was for his boys, that is, for John's friends. He no like it they is killed, John's father told me. He say, poor my boys, poor my boys. And my wife tell him all the time, no go back, no go back. But he go. Commodore Carey?
Now hear this, to all hands, theater number 2 shall henceforth be known as the Butch O'Hare Theater.
Lieutenant Commander Edward Henry O'Hare, United States Navy. Missing in aerial combat 27 November 1943 off Tarawa. His father was a lawyer, promoter, and a sportsman, friend of Jim Farley and of other politicians. When the boy finished Western Military Academy, he was given an appointment to Annapolis. As for the action which marks his name in bold-faced letters on the long roll of American heroism, so that even those who have no wish to remember must pause and remember, the facts are these. During the Battle of the Coral Sea, a formation of 9 heavy enemy bombers was spotted approaching to attack his ship, the carrier Lexington. At the moment, O'Hare was the only fighter pilot aloft and ready. Alone, unaided, he braved the combined machine gun and cannon fire of the entire enemy formation, knocking 5 of the Japanese bombers from the air, damaging a 6th, and saving his carrier. For this exploit, called in his citation, one of the most daring, if not the most daring, single action in the history of combat aviation, he was awarded the Medal of Honor. He, too, was given a triumphal tour of the States, and he had a little time to get slightly acquainted with his infant child, Kathleen, born by Rita, the girl he had married just 3 months before the war had begun. He returned to combat, distinguished himself further in the campaigns for the Gilbert and Marshall Islands, and after shooting down his 9th plane, disappeared into the night. The studios of KXOK, St. Louis, Missouri, his mother, Mrs. Selma O'Hare, is waiting to talk to us. Are you there, Mrs. O'Hare?
Yes, Mr. Wells.
Tell me, Mrs. O'Hare, how do you feel when you heard Butch had shot down 5 planes in a single engagement? How'd you feel?
Well, the way I first heard, it was 7. 7 out of 9. A newspaper man called and told me about it. He was very excited, and I was too, I guess. You know what I said?
No, what?
I said, why didn't he get the other 2?
You must have been very proud.
I was, and I am.
Mrs. O'Hare, did Butch know what he was fighting for? Did he ever put it into words?
I don't know. He was just doing his duty.
Did he ever waver? Did he ever wonder?
Well, after Edward said goodbye to his wife and baby, she was just 4 months old when he went back to combat. His letters for the first time were, well, unsure. I wrote back that he had more to fight for than ever and that he was doing right. And I still think so. He did what was right.
Yes, he did, Mrs. O'Hare.
But Mr. Wells...
Yes?
Can't we do something to see that there's no more war?
We can try, Mrs. O'Hare. Thank you. Commodore Carey, we're ready for the final dedication.
Now hear this, to all hands. Theater number 1 shall henceforth be known as the Doris Miller Theater.
Doris Miller, ship's cook, 3rd class Doris Miller, United States Navy. Lost at sea, 24 November 1943 in the sinking of the Liscombe Bay. Doris's father is a farmer. He and his wife rent a farm for Mrs. Walker's on a rental basis known among sharecroppers as the Haffers. When on the 7th of December 1941 a certain memorable attack occurred at Pearl Harbor, Doris was serving as a mess attendant, 2nd class, aboard the battleship Arizona. A naval reserve lieutenant and Doris manned a pair of machine guns and fired upon the attacking planes, which were strafing and bombing the ship unmercifully. Doris and the lieutenant are said to have shot down 8 enemy planes. The exact figure has never been substantiated, but what has been substantiated, and this without question, is that Doris Miller, as a Negro messman, had never been trained in gunnery. I'm happy, I'm very happy to report that naval training procedures have since been altered. For distinguished devotion to duty, extraordinary courage, and disregard for his personal safety, Doris was awarded the Navy Cross. Doris got home to Waco just once after that on a 30-day leave and was subsequently lost on the Liscum Bay. In Waco at this moment, seated at a microphone at station WACO, is his father, Connery Miller. Can you hear me, Mr. Miller?
Yes, I hear you.
Will you tell me something about your boy, Mr. Miller?
Doris was a mighty fine boy. He never was in any trouble with anyone in his life.
Well, Doris, I beg your pardon, Mr. Miller. Will you say that again?
Doris was a mighty fine boy. He never was in any trouble. Never was in any trouble with anyone. We thought a lot of Doris.
Well, tell me, when Doris came home on his 30-day leave, did he tell you much about the war?
No. Doris didn't like to talk about the war. He says when he talk about the war, it make him feel, make him think about his buddies, what got killed with him.
I see. Well, Mr. Miller, do you think things are any better for your people because of the war? Mr. Miller, I say, do you think things are any better for your people because of the war?
No.
Not even a little bit?
No.
Well, when white boys and Negro boys fight and die together, don't you think that makes for less prejudice?
I think a man should be a man regardless of his color.
Well, I know that's what I'm saying, Mr. Miller. Don't you think the heroism of a boy like Doris makes for a change?
It may be. I don't see no change yet.
But you must expect things to get a little better. Don't you think there's any hope for the future?
It may be. I hope so.
Because don't you see, Mr. Miller, if your boy's death does make things better, it has more meaning. It may have been worth it.
We had Doris all of his life. We raised him up to be a man grown. And if we had our brothers, we would rather have our boy. I guess you know that.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Miller. Ladies and gentlemen, America's heroes have come from all walks of life and all classes and creeds and colors. That, I take it, is democracy. That, I take it, is what America's heroes die for. We mustn't let them down. Let's make our democracy stronger.
I want to thank you, Mr. Wells, for being with us today.
Thank you, Commodore Carey, for inviting me. And now your attention, please, ladies and gentlemen, for an interesting announcement.
Just half a minute to give you some advance information about the new Lear home radios and one of the exclusive features you'll find in them. It is an entirely unique way of tuning your set from your easy chair. Not just a few pre-selected stations, but any program you want anywhere on your dial. At your fingertips is a pair of tiny knobs. One for tuning, one for volume. Across the room is the fine radio that responds to your every wish. You're going to hear a lot about this new Lear development. It's something you will want in your radio. Something you will find only in Lear radios. L-E-A-R. As the Navy Department does not endorse any product, our appearance on this naval base today does not constitute an endorsement of Lear radios. And now a final word from Orson Welles.
Well, I haven't got much time, and this is not a news program, but in spite of our prejudice against rumors, here's one that I think is worth your attention. Reliable sources, that well-known source, and these, however, are pretty reliable, inform me that Nazi scientists are working on the atom bomb in Franco, Spain. Well, that's all for now. Please let me come to call again, and thanks for this time. Until next Sunday, same time, same station. My sponsors, the makers of Lear Radios, and I remain, as always, obediently yours.
This is the American Broadcasting Company.